Hello and welcome back to the CTB show. Thomas Pokornik and Christian Catanacci. A very sad Thomas Pokornik and Christian Catanacci coming at you today. Monday, we just had wildcard weekend. Super wildcard weekend. Again,
it was not so
not super.
Not super
at all. Cat, so I would super. Ask you how you're doing, but I think I know the answer. Because I kind of feel at first like I thought I was in the same boat, but you are in a boat that is severely more destroyed than my boat and has been shipwrecked more times than my boat has. But I mean, it's not a competition here, but how are you?
I've been better, Pac. I've had better days. It's unfortunate that I've gotten used to this feeling of being let down, let's say. So, I mean, I've had better days, like I said. But it did hurt. It stung, and it did suck. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I was stunned. And if you don't know what we're talking about, if you're new to the show, so Cat is a big fan of America's team, those Dallas Cowboys. That, I mean, they showed up like they always do every January. They show up to rip the hearts out of so many. 8-0 at home. Is that correct?
Am I
correct
in saying that? They were 16-0, actually, their last 16 straight games at home.
What a time to just play your worst football at home in front of your fans as the number two seed. And it's so fitting that it's the Green Bay Packers that just continue to churn out, and maybe it's premature to call them this, but generational talents at quarterback. Like, the only thing that Jordan Love is missing now is a retirement home in New York, because at this rate, he's going to be a Jet by the time he's 38 years old after he breaks every single Packers record in the book. It's crazy. And, like, there's so much to unpack on today's show. We're pretty much going to cover every single wild card game that went on. There's a couple going on still right now. I mean, the Bills and the Steelers are playing. The Eagles and the Bucks are later tonight. But we had a good weekend of three blowouts and one very, very good game to close things out on Sunday night. But man, your Cowboys, my Dolphins. I've had more time to get over it, but Saturday night I remember just sitting down and just not wanting to, just after the game was terrible. It's a terrible feeling. I said to my dad, I liked it better when we sucked. You knew we were going to lose, and you could just look forward and just start reading mock drafts in November. It was honestly not more fun, because I had a fun season watching the Dolphins, but, like, man.
It hurt. I'm not gonna cut around corners. This one hurt. It sucked. I'll put it this way. I've never been more disappointed, and that says a lot. In a Cowboys team than I was on Sunday evening. Like I said, it hurt, it sucked. And the worst part about it is I don't see it getting any better, to be honest. I thought this was their one chance, their best chance of the quote-unquote Mike McCarthy era. So yeah, sure, go ahead. Fire Mike, go and hire Bill, whatever you want. Like I was, a lot of people know, I think that's a horrible idea, but we'll save that for another time. Trade Dak, fire Dan Quinn, whatever you want. Do whatever you want, because at the end of the day, the Dallas Cowboys will do what the Dallas Cowboys do best. And that is choke when it matters the most. I think this loss honestly tipped me over the edge. It's just really hard for me to sit here and just breathe life into Cowboys Nation. Really, it is really hard. Like, I want to, as bad as I would like to say and sit here and say it gets better. I genuinely don't believe that. I mean, so look, I'll put it this way. If you're a fan of the Cowboys, I feel your pain, and I wish I could say that things would get better. And if you're a hater of the Dallas Cowboys, I'll say congratulations. You've won yet again.
I don't know how much of that is, like, I've had 24 extra hours than you to process my team's humiliation, and because of how bad yours was, it seems like everyone's already forgotten about what the Miami Dolphins did. And I know the Miami Dolphins haven't, you know, made it to the playoffs year after year. This is only the second year they've made the playoffs in, like, the last decade. So, but it's still, like, with the Lions' win last night, the Dolphins now own the longest playoff drought. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because your whole idea of, like, this was our best chance. And I'm wondering if sometimes that's a little bit, like, prisoner of the moment, because at the end of the day, like I said, I've had that extra 24 hours than you have to just process the game and just sort of get over it and push aside the, you know, immediate emotional feelings that you have when you're so attached to a team. You have a good core. You have a remedy that you know you're going to win 11, 12 games. Like, you feel like you're going to be back here again next year. And whether it's win or lose, adversity is like a part of sports. And Dak Prescott is a really good quarterback. And maybe he just needs, and I mean, I feel like I'm more saying this through the lens of Tua than Dak, because Dak has been there many, many times. But you have to believe with some of these guys, and maybe everyone says the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. But you have to believe at some point they're going to turn the corner, no?
I mean, look, I'm glad you brought that up, because exactly what you said. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again. But I think the Cowboys have done the same thing over and over and over again. You look at the team the last 15 years, they went from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy. And now, assuming Mike McCarthy does get fired, which I don't think he, I mean, sorry, I do think he does. I don't think there's any way where he is coaching this team next season. And let's say you bring in a guy like Bill Belichick or Jim Harbaugh, or it's the same stuff. It's like, okay, sure, you get a nice veteran head coach with a really good pedigree, and that's not what this team needs, right? They need to lean into offensive innovation. I watched the Cowboys play, and I mean, again, maybe this is just the bias side of me, but I watch Green Bay. Jordan Love played outstanding. We'll get into him in a bit, but guys were wide open sometimes. I watched the Lions and the Rams yesterday, and for the most part, Matthew Stafford was throwing darts 24/7, but Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford had moments where their guys were left wide open. I watched the Cowboys, and that never happens. Like, we don't ever scheme guys open. We don't ever make it easy on our quarterback, and you're seeing it firsthand. Again, it comes with the nature of the position. Dak, you either love him or you hate him. And it seems so often, I struggle to get a grasp around Dak, because at his best, I know what he's capable of. And then he always seems to just put up a dud when you need it the most. But again, it just feels like, sure, yeah, okay, he sucked. But the defense puts up 40, gets 42 points dropped on them at home. It's like, even if he played outstanding and put up 40 points, still loses the game. So, like, there is so much that went wrong about the Cowboys. Again, Dak's obviously going to get most of the blame. Mike McCarthy's going to get most of the blame. Deservingly so. They were both very, very poor, and it just happened to be the most important game of the season so far, where they just come up and put up a dud. But, again, I don't think it's going to get better. I genuinely think that this was the year. The Cowboys had two really good years, 2020 to 21 and 2023. Last year, the team was good, but, again, they had pretty solid holes, and everyone knew that they just struggled when it mattered the most. This year, it was a little bit different. Like, you take out that San Francisco game and maybe the Buffalo game, but, like, they were a great team. This was a team that a lot of people expected them to finally get to that even just conference championship game. And to lose to a, I'm going to call him a rookie because it's his first year starting. I get he's not a rookie because he's been in the league for 3 years now. But to lose at home, riding a 16-game win streak at home, as a 7-point favorite, like, I don't know. Honestly, it's so frustrating, and it's so fresh still that I honestly think it's going to take me a while to get. Like, yesterday I tried to watch the game last night, and I legit couldn't. Like, I was like, I'm football sick.
That's
like
how I felt Saturday night.
It sucked. It just sucked. And waking up this morning, just seeing all, I don't think I blocked more people on Twitter today than in my life, probably in my life. Like, Skip Bayless blocked, Stephen A. Smith blocked, Colin Cowherd blocked. I just don't want to hear it, because I have my own opinion for the Cowboys, and I guess that's the only one that really matters. It's frustrating. Come September, I will be back on the train, because that's just how fandom works. But I sure hope some changes come, and I hope it's not Bill Belichick for once. I hope Jerry Jones does the right thing. As great as Bill has been, like we mentioned on last show, and we took a lot of slack for it. But I think the game has outgrown him, and I think you have to lean into offensive innovation. bring me a young head coach, bring me someone that could elevate your quarterback, right? A lot of people sit here on this on talk shows and voice their opinions about how the quarterback is supposed to elevate their players. Correct. I 100% agree. But why doesn't anyone ever talk about the quarterback getting elevated by their head coach? That is never getting talked about, but you see it first. Jared Goff, great quarterback, but is he elite? No. Ben Johnson has him looking like a Super Bowl quarterback. Like, the Lions could go on and win the Super Bowl with Jared Goff. So if the Lions could do that with Goff, why can't the Cowboys do that with Dak? That's where I am here. I'll leave it at that. It's going to be a long offseason, but when isn't it in Cowboys Nation? But super frustrating. I'm looking forward to leaving it in the past. But it's going to take a while too.
I was going to say, Saturday night, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of looking forward to 9 months free of Miami Dolphins football. And it's weird to say because so many times during the week, like, I'm so much looking forward to the game. But the last month was just agonizing and frustrating. And I mean, you talked about you want the Cowboys to go in a direction of a young offensive mind. Miami did that. He elevated our offense. He was so great. And now I'm starting to call him Mike McScreen Pass because that's all he was calling Saturday night. And it was so, so frustrating. So you never know. Like I said, I feel like I'm a little bit more optimistic on the Cowboys than you are right now. But I also don't have the emotional attachment, and I haven't pretty much been put through the ringer for my entire life as a fan in terms of getting my hopes up and just being immediately crushed. All right, let's talk a little bit. We'll stick on the Cowboys game, but I think you're doing a disservice to the sport of football if you just only focus on the Cowboys, because we have to talk about Jordan Love and the Packers. You called him a rookie. I mean, in a way, he kind of has. This is his first sort of go-around as being the guy, as having an opportunity to lead an offense. There was a time during the year where it was like, oh, well, I guess the Packers got to go back to the drawing board. They got to draft somebody. They got to move off this guy. He hasn't looked the part. He's turning the ball over. He can't really make all the throws. Completion percentage was like hovering around 55, 60%, not ideal. And it just seems like you snap your fingers and he's figured it out. He was so, so good down the stretch. And the NFL is the ultimate prisoner of the moment league. And you look at guys like Joe Burrow, who are the ultimate example of that. Nobody cares what you do in September. Nobody cares what you do about in October. If you can play your best football in December and January, you're probably playing in February. And that's what matters at the end of the day. Jordan Love has done that. You can argue he's been the best quarterback in the NFL the last 6 weeks, and the numbers back it. It is special what this guy is doing. And to have that maturity to struggle early on in the year, will your team down to the playoffs, go on the road into a veteran team with, like you just mentioned, Super Bowl level expectations, and not just win, but blow them out and completely embarrass them. It is insane what Jordan Love has done.
I mean, look, I think the Packers, how they develop and find their quarterbacks needs to be, like, studied
under
a magnifying
glass. So is it that,
glass.
Or have they just gotten lucky with hits three times in a row?
Honestly, it is luck. It's a bit of luck. People want to say, like,
or, like, good drafting as well, 100%, too, and identifying talent, but, like,
good drafting, you need a little bit of luck, right? Like, you need guys to stumble to you, sure, or whatever it is. Like, Aaron Rodgers fell right to the Packers. Jordan Love, for the most part, also fell to the late first round. Like, this is a guy in the process was pretty highly touted. He was considered raw and needed to sit for a while, but not a lot of people expected him to go in the late 20s. There were some people that thought he could even sneak into the top 15, top 10, right? And he falls to the Packers. He sits behind Aaron Rodgers. I think, honestly, maybe they cloned him because, like, their mannerisms are so weird. Like, the whole week building up to it, I was like, okay, I had PTSD from Packers and Cowboys playoff games and just games in general because, look, any Cowboy fan does. We're talking about a team that's 6-0 now, lifetime, in AT&T Stadium. They actually have won more playoff games at AT&T Stadium than the Cowboys have. Think about that.
And they've won a Super Bowl there, too.
Exactly. And you look at the mannerisms and just the way that he throws that little fadeaway off of his back foot. It's like, are we sure this isn't Rodgers? It's remarkable, honestly. It's almost, I couldn't help but laugh at parts of the game where it's like, it's like, again, they just did it again. From Favre to Rodgers to Jordan Love. Now, Jordan Love has a way... He has a mountain to climb before he gets on that pedestal of players. And even if he doesn't even sniff what they once were, he's a darn good quarterback. And for someone that the first 6 weeks of the season were... The Packers were in the Caleb Williams sweepstakes at one point, and people were questioning whether Jordan Love is the guy. For him to just turn it around... is truly remarkable, truly, truly remarkable. And now, do I think they have enough to go into San Francisco and win? Don't think so. Again, it's prisoner of the moment. Maybe I'm wrong. They're playing with house money, so it makes them scary in a sense. But I think a lot of people are just getting a little bit too excited about this Packers team right now. Their future is incredibly bright, right? Like, I'm not saying this Packers team isn't going to be players. Like, next year, who knows? They could be right there with the Lions for division favorites. But what a truly phenomenal game by Jordan Love. Just really stepping in right where Aaron Rodgers left off and just completely owning the Dallas Cowboys and AT&T Stadium.
Yeah, and you talked about them going into San Fran and potentially winning. The Packers 3 days ago were in the "we're just happy to be here" tier. I mean, I feel like obviously the players aren't viewing it like that. They're trying to win, but... The fan base was just saying, like, wow, it's great that we were able to make the playoffs in year one with a new quarterback. And now the fact that they're competing, and, I mean, San Fran, as good as they are, they've rested now 2 weeks, and Jordan Love's so hot, like, maybe that plays a bit of a factor. I'm sure they're at least worried, because what the Packers have done is has caught the eye of a ton of people. And it's not just Jordan Love. They have a ton of young playmakers who have made a lot of, I mean, Romeo Dubs had a crazy game yesterday. Aaron Jones, whether it's just because they played against the Cowboys, who he seems to own, but they got a lot of great talent on defense too, which was also a worry going in. And mind you, they did give up a lot in the end when they're playing prevent and they're just trying to protect the lead. But it's just crazy because nobody saw this coming. And I would love to hear, honestly, from the perspective of a Packers fan, because this was one of the most scrutinized draft picks in like NFL history. One of the biggest moments where it's just like, fire everyone. This pick literally caused a rift between the organization and maybe their greatest player ever, Aaron Rodgers. You could have had guys like Justin Jefferson, T. Higgins at that pick. Who knows how that could have elevated them if they would have won more in that Aaron Rodgers window. It's like, there's so many layers to this Aaron Rodgers story, or this Jordan Love story, sorry. So the fact that it's working out in the end makes it even better.
I agree. You honestly even look back at that dynamic and the whole dynamic about that story, about how everyone made it seem that Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love just had this horrible relationship, and Aaron Rodgers wanted nothing to do with Jordan Love, and they're trying to make him out to be some villain. And I honestly think it was quite the opposite. Like, this literally looks like someone that was mentored closely by Aaron Rodgers, someone that took thousands of snaps. And maybe I'm speculating a little or looking too much into it, but like, I believe that Aaron Rodgers really, really helped this kid. And that's what I took out it the most. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sure, Patrick Mahomes sat behind Alex Smith. Obviously, Alex Smith isn't some great quarterback like Aaron Rodgers was, but Patrick Mahomes' play style is completely different than Alex Smith's. Like, Jordan Love coming out of college was nowhere near the player that he is now, right? And for him to literally, like, adapt the exact same play style as Aaron Rodgers tells me that Rodgers worked closely with this guy. And I think it's paying dividends. Like, I'm happy you brought that up, because even Packers fans sat here and were like, no, this is the worst draft pick ever. Get Rodgers weapons. And you look 4 years after, 3 years after, they look like geniuses. And it honestly is almost like... blueprintish. It's like, okay, so if what you're saying is, if you're a picking in the 20s and you have an older quarterback or someone that, you know, is stuck in sort of QB purgatory range, and let's say a good quarterback prospect falls into the 20s, instead of forcing a draft pick on an offensive lineman or a defensive tackle, why not take a gamble on the quarterback and see, look, let's see if we can develop him into a Jordan Love, right? Like, I think you're going to see a lot of teams try and follow and try and mimic. Again, it's a copycat league, so I'd be shocked if teams at least didn't try. Obviously, it's not going to work every time. It's, again, it goes back to, is it skill? Is it luck? It's a little bit of both, but it's truly remarkable what Jordan Love is doing with the Packers.
That draft class, five quarterbacks taken in, let's say, like the first 50 picks, because Jalen Hurts was, you know, middle, second round.
Yeah, 60 or something. I don't know, 50-something.
Three of them have won playoff games.
Yep.
Two of them have been to a Super Bowl, the Eagles and the Bengals. The fact that the Packers have won a playoff game, and I mean one playoff game with the guy that they drafted starting, because obviously with Aaron Rodgers, they were going to continue to win playoff games. But the fact that they beat both the Chargers and the Dolphins to playoff wins, drafting Jordan Love with all that criticism where the Dolphins were starting fresh with Tua and the Chargers were starting fresh with Justin Herbert. All the criticism, like it really is crazy. And I wonder, I feel like some Packers fans, if you ask them, maybe they'll still say, hey, I wish we just went all out, got Aaron Rodgers some more weapons. But I bet you more than 70% of them now are like all in and saying like, wow, we were wrong. Trust the guys who are paid to do this job, scout, draft, build teams. And now we're in a position where we can continue to compete for some time.
Yeah, I mean, look, it must be nice to be a Packers fan. I'm envious of them at times.
One day they're going to learn. One day they're going to, you know, everyone knows that Cleveland Browns jersey that starts with Tim Couch and just has like, 50 names on it. Not that I wish, bad things to happen to any franchise, but one day I think Green Bay is going to come to the terms with the fact that their quarterback isn't one of the top 10. I mean, Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, top three, top five. Like, this run is insane. The amount, like, the Chicago Bears have never even had a 4,000-yard passer.
Which is
the New York Jets have not had a player throw 10 passing touchdowns since, I believe, 2018.
Wow.
One single player hasn't hit 10 passing touchdowns.
Wow.
And we got teams like the Packers that just in their sleep are churning out playoff wins with quarterbacks with a 157.7 passer rating.
Like, perfect passer rating. Yeah. It's honestly incredible. But we'll shift gears to a team that also has a topic not necessarily as positive as the Packers with their quarterback, and that is your Miami Dolphins. Now, I know you mentioned that you have it pretty tough, which I agree. Now that the Lions have gotten over the hump, seemingly, that leaves two loser franchises, and one of them is the Cowboys, and one of them is the Dolphins. Now, as someone that's praised Tua, and again, I'm not saying that Tua is all to blame, but there is at times now, it's fair to ask yourself what the ceiling is of a team that is operating with Tua Tagovailoa under center. Now, I want to hear your thoughts as a whole about this Dolphins game, because I think going in, it was already a tough hill for the Dolphins to climb. Like, I believe they were 0-10 in games that were 10 degrees or below zero.
Below 40.
Degrees, regardless.
Yeah, the last 10 games below 40. Tua in those is just 0-4. Like, this is only the fifth time he's played in below 40 degree weather. The team, though, that stems since 2017, 0-10 in their last 10 games below 40 degrees.
Exactly. So, like, again, I'm not going to say it's unfair to judge them off of one game, but it continues on this seemingly narrative that's gone on all year about how the Dolphins fail to show up against big teams. And I want to hear what it is from a Dolphins perspective, and then I'll sort of give my thoughts as someone that's watching from the back end.
So much to unpack with the Miami Dolphins, because first of all, like you said, this is a notorious loser franchise in this century, in this millennium. In my entire time on this earth, I was born in 2001, the Miami Dolphins have not won a playoff game. So everything I've done in my life has gone on since they've last won a playoff game. Crazy, it's embarrassing, it's obviously ridiculous, but that can't fall on the current regime, because Mike McDaniel wasn't around in 2005 and 2009 and 2012 when they had all these opportunities to get to the playoffs and win a playoff game, and they haven't. And neither was Tua. So I think that completely has to go out the window when we talk about this current core, and I think the word patience needs to come into play here, because Mike McDaniel's been here for 2 years. They were 9-8 in their first year, where he had to start a backup quarterback for 6-7 games, and it was just a disaster after Tua couldn't stay healthy. And Tua's been here for 4 years. They've had a winning record every single year he's been the starting quarterback. Like I said, 9-8 last year. He was, I think, 8-4, somewhere in that range. This year, they win 11 games. And there is so, so much good with this team, and there is so, so much good with Tua. The problem is this. Against bad teams, he looks incredible. Against good teams, he cannot rise to the occasion. He cannot elevate his play. He cannot elevate the play of this offense and this team, and they just look like a disaster. They're the number one scoring offense in the league. You go play on the road, tough weather, tough conditions, tough defense, and you completely turtle. All they're calling is screen passes. You give up on the run game, and it's just like, what are we doing? Like, how did we get here? How did we look so, so good in so many moments, and now we can't step up? So that's where all the concern is. Where I think there is a little bit of, you call it tough decision on the future of this team is, in my eyes, Tua is better than 70% of quarterbacks in the NFL. But to be the best in the quarterback, this quarterback-driven league, you need to go out and you need to beat Josh Allen. You need to beat Patrick Mahomes. You need to beat Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. And, you know, guys like Jordan Love now are rising to the occasion. And it's like, you really, really need someone to step up. So the one question we all have now is, can he do that? And I'm not saying whether he can or can't. I'm saying that he deserves more time to prove that he can. Because we haven't had even a sliver of hope in this organization since Dan Marino left. And the fact that he's churned out 4 consecutive winning seasons, he's been a top 3 rated passer in the NFL for 2 years in a row. His completion percentage is always top 5. He had a great year in the yards department and the touchdown department. Like, he is very good. This team has so, so many good players. And honestly, missing 7 defensive starters on the road in Kansas City, good luck as it is. So it's the nature of the position. A lot of it's going to fall on Tua. I know I just rambled on for like 5 minutes. I don't even know what the point I got across is. But it's like, let's all just relax, because Miami isn't the franchise that some of these fans are pretending it to be. And they just need to have a little bit more patience with the current regime right now that really hasn't been there for that long, and they've already gotten some results.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you brought that up. I like how you mentioned the abandoning of the run game, because that's something that I thought you guys did so well during the year. And to see, especially in those conditions, I get the start of the game didn't really go as planned, but it's a long game. Like, yeah, to completely abandon the run the way that you guys did was very questionable, in my opinion. So I think there is quite, like, again, I think it's sort of young head coach does definitely deserves some of the blame. It was his first big moment, so I see why he could sort of crumble in this situation. I mean, it's not like the Cowboys situation where your head coach is a veteran and he continues to crumble in that situation. It's more like Mike McDaniel was just dealing with his first playoff game. Like, it's a lot of nerves, and you could be the greatest head coach since, I mean, Bill Belichick back in the 2000s. But, like, you get my point. It's the nerves. And same with Tua, too. It's like, okay, sure, could he have played better? Yeah. I think he deserves a good chunk of the blame. But you said 70%. Yeah, he is better than 70% of the quarterbacks. But it's like, are you either content with that, or do you want to see if you can get more? Because I think there's a lot of teams that are in the same situation where it's like, okay, we're content with the quarterback, but I definitely don't think the Dolphins would hesitate to even at least consider potentially upgrading the position. And maybe that includes bringing in a veteran as a backup to give him some sort of competition, because, I mean, let's face it, Skylar Thompson isn't really going to do that. So I think 2024 is a big year for Tua. I think you're going to see a lot. And who knows, maybe it's setting up for a franchise tag situation, because I don't think he's played himself into a contract extension this year, but who knows? You've seen it. You've seen weirder things. Teams tend to want to avoid the franchise tag because it just could create a rift in the relationship, or it could rub the player the wrong way. So I'm not sure what the Dolphins are going to do here, but I mean, I feel for you, Pac, because if there's someone that knows how you feel, it's definitely me. And to see the Dolphins go from such a promising start, like we're talking 70 piece against the Broncos and just the team that was flying in September and October, just to have their season derail the way it did, it definitely sucks. And there's no other way to put it. Like, it stinks. And I know you got KC and you got to go into Arrowhead, so it's not like you were expecting to win the game.
But that's our own fault.
Yeah, and I think you're right.
With the team we have, we know the importance of winning our division and playing at home. And not even just winning our division. You need multiple home games in the playoffs for this team to win a Super Bowl one day. Because they've proven that they can't go on the road in this cold weather. Like, the Super Bowl needs to run through Miami. They need to go out and get that 2 seed. They need to go out and get that 1 seed. They had an opportunity to get the 1 seed this year in Baltimore. If they had won that game, all it would have taken was a Week 18 win, and they would have had the 1 seed and a bye. And they had an opportunity to get the 2 seed in Week 18, and they lost that too. So they're at fault in both of those scenarios for that. But it was very unfortunate with the way the season went, and we started off so great, and the bodies that we lost throughout. But I'll just one more thing on the quarterback before we move on to another topic. You talked about the prospect of looking for an upgrade. I mentioned that Cleveland Browns, Tim Couch jersey. Like, that was Miami for so, so long. We finally have a guy who is definitively, and I mean like not even close, the best quarterback that they've had since Dan Marino. And I know that's not saying much because of what the franchise has had. But I think Dolphins fans are so quick to forget our 20-plus year search for even a sliver of stability at this position. We finally have it. Build around it. Make it work with this guy. The Detroit Lions are winning playoff games with Jared Goff, who was once a team's scraps. They didn't even want him.
They dumped him for a first-round pick. They gave an additional first-round pick to take Jared Goff's contract.
So there's no excuses. Make it work. We know Tua, in some areas, he has all the talent in the world. Some areas he's limited. Yes, absolutely. Find out what works for him. Find out how to win with it. That is the job of the coach. That is the job of the GM. You have a great roster. You have a great core. Run it back. There's so much hope with this team and this organization. Don't get too down on one bad month of football. Take this break. Go back next year. Go in a couple playoff games.
Yep. I agree. And look, we'll shift gears again because we'll stick on the topic of the quarterback. It seems to always be in the headlines, but CJ Stroud and the Texans are surely making it look like rookie quarterbacks can just come in and change a franchise for the better.
This episode has covered a lot of pain within organizations, and you know the Cowboys fans have pain for several reasons, and Dolphins fans, I mean, if you're any younger than me, you've never seen a playoff win. If you're any older than me, it is, you know, hasn't even been that great too, considering they haven't won a Super Bowl in 50 years. But Panthers fans watching Super Wild Card Weekend, you might think like, well, that's weird. You know, Panthers weren't in the playoffs, but maybe they could have been.
Yeah,
maybe they could have been if they went out and they got CJ Stroud. And I don't want to make this a Bryce Young conversation because I think it is way too early to make any judgments on him. And let's be honest, this Panthers roster is terrible. There's nothing to work with. So you can play the what if game where if CJ Stroud went to the Panthers, who knows what could happen. But the fact that the Houston Texans also didn't have a ton to work with this year, and everyone was projecting them to win 4 games, 5 games, a subtle improvement on the year before. They've won 11 games now this season, if you count their win. That is more wins than they had in the prior 3 years combined. Give all the credit to CJ Stroud. Give all the credit to D'Amico Ryans. But this whole entire roster has just completely transformed and elevated their play, and they become one of the most fun teams to watch in the NFL. Again, it's another instance, just like the Jordan Love conversation, where you're watching this young quarterback play with no fear and your jaw is just dropped wide open.
Remember when everyone sat there and said that the Houston Texans were crazy for trading their 2024 first-round pick to move back up and draft Will Anderson? That pick is now the 26th overall selection. Obviously, it's going to Arizona, but what a turnaround. And it is honestly remarkable. And for someone that sat here and, I mean, for my ego, I had to go back and just look at my old CJ Stroud takes, which I was correct on all of them. I've been wrong quite a bit, but I guess I you know, my CJ Stroud take, it's been aging greatly. This is someone that I thought was the QB1 by a mile, like a country mile. I watched this guy play at Ohio State, perform in big games, game after game after game. Like, you watch him play against Georgia, and it's just like, why wouldn't you want that guy to be your franchise quarterback? And to see how quickly he's turned the Texans around, and again, even though I said CJ Stroud was the QB1 and he was this franchise quarterback and he had this great future and high ceiling, I didn't even expect the Texans to turn around. I think I picked them to win like two games this year, which is honestly the complete opposite. Like, right? We're talking nine games off. So 11 wins for the Texans. What a statement. I know they were only 2.5-point underdogs, but to go and beat the Browns in the fashion that they did was like a statement. And I'll put it this way. I don't know if they're going to get it done, but if I'm Baltimore, I am pooing my pants right now. I would be like, I do not want anything, any part of this Texans team. Let's say Houston goes in to MT Bank Stadium and starts with an opening touchdown or goes up 10-0 or 13 or 14-0. It's like, that is a recipe for disaster if I'm the Baltimore Ravens. And as good as Baltimore is, who knows? When there's some teams that just have that just feeling about them. And I said this to Pac off air. I texted him while we were doing this. We were doing our brackets, and I always like to get bold. And I said, it really sucked because I was like, I was torn between the Browns and the Texans because I felt like, like I mentioned last episode, I thought that there was a really legitimate scenario where the Browns could go on a run, and then they got paired up with the Texans. So it sucked. I ended up picking the Texans, and I told Pac, I said, I just get Bengals 2021 vibes from these guys. They just, playing with house money, have this just quarterback that is swagged out. Like, he is just so good. I'd be scared, man. I'd be scared if I'm Baltimore, and they cannot. I don't think there's a worse matchup. I said it against the. I said it for the Browns. I said it last week about the Browns. First week of wild card. I'm like, they can go on a run, but there's not a worse first round matchup. And I will say the same thing about the Ravens. They can go on a run. Heck, they could win the Super Bowl. If I'm picking a team to win the Super Bowl right now, it's either Baltimore or San Francisco. But guess what? I don't think there's a team you want to play outside of the Texans. I would not be down if I'm the Ravens. And it is not an easy game. There's a lot that can go wrong. And CJ Stroud can just be the bearer of bad news if I'm Baltimore.
Again, the same thing. It's similar thing to what I said about San Fran. The Ravens, they rested everyone in week 18. 2 weeks off, pretty much 3 weeks since their last real competitive game of football. And in week 17, they blew up Miami so bad that, you know, they were already resting players in that one. So it's weird because you got this team that has been playing playoff football for like 4 weeks now in Houston, because everything has been must win, must win, must win. They played that Saturday game in week 18. That was win and get in. They did it. They won the division. Then they go, they host the Cleveland Browns, who, by the way, is that the weirdest stat ever? The fact that they're the number one scoring defense at home and the 32nd best scoring defense on the road, and they just got 48 points dropped on them. Like, crazy. CJ Stroud has just been remarkable, and it's fitting for me that the fact that they're playing the Ravens, because these two teams met in week one, and I actually watched a lot of that game, weirdly enough, because at the time no one really thought anything of the Texans. And I remember watching the Houston Texans offense, and it was CJ Stroud's first start in the NFL, and I was just thinking, like, man, they are feeding this kid to the wolves. At the time, I didn't know how good Baltimore's defense was, and now they're probably the best defense in the NFL. And also, I thought very, very lowly of the Texans roster, and I just thought that they were going to be this team where the quarterback, has nothing to work with around him. We didn't know anything about Tank Dell, and Nico Collins hadn't had a breakout season yet. And I mean, Devin Singletary was a Bills bust at that point. How much has changed since that week one when the Ravens just, I think they won like 20-3 or something like that. They just shut them down, and the Texans offense just really had nothing. How much has changed now? Or what was the score? 25-9.
Yeah. CJ Stroud was 20-44 for 242, zero touchdowns, zero picks. Yeah,
so actually not horrible.
Like, but he threw the ball 44 ball. Times.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So it was just a lot of like praying and pushing the ball down the field now that we're losing. But the fact that now Texans come in, like if I sat there week one with you and said, hey, you know, 4 or 5 months from now, the Texans are going to come back here and they're going to be a feared offense with a rookie quarterback that looks like he is a top five quarterback in the league and a potential coach of the year candidate and a young defense that's hungry and opportunistic and makes big plays, you would have looked at me and said, like, what the heck kind of garbage are you predicting? This Texans team sucks. They're feeding their rookie quarterback to the Wolves. They're probably going to ruin him like they've ruined every other good player they've had at their franchise. So, you know what? Hats off to Houston, man. They deserve it, and I'm really happy to see them doing well.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's an awesome story. From the quarterback to the head coach, Tech, the offensive coordinator is playing himself into maybe the most attractive head coaching candidate of the offseason. Like, Bobby Sowick is fantastic. And another one of those Shanahan guys, someone that's going to ultimately go on and do great things, at least I believe so. But he's going to be a home run hire for someone that hires him this offseason. If that happens, I assume he will leave the Texans because he's just having one of those years where you just got to capitalize on it because there's only 32 jobs in the world, and he's going to be one of, if not the most pursued of the coordinators along Ben Johnson of the Detroit Lions, who finally, January 5th, 1992?
Yeah.
Was the last time the Detroit Lions won a playoff game. And they get it done. And honestly, I know I picked against them, but I felt for them. I was rooting for Detroit. I love seeing Jared Goff succeed. I think he's an awesome dude. I think he's been counted out by so many. Heck, he got kicked to the curb by the Rams. We just mentioned upon it like 10 minutes ago about how the Rams added a first-round pick in that trade just for them to take Jared Goff's contract. Because they weren't originally interested in Goff, right? Like, people say, oh, Detroit's geniuses for training for Goff. They didn't even want him. They didn't. If you ask for, I during the game yesterday, I went up and they pretty much put it as like Jared Goff was just a throw into us. Like, he was supposed to just be a stopgap quarterback.
That was the best way to get value for Matthew Stafford.
100%
was the salary. Exactly. And then obviously the picks that they got in return.
100%. Sure. But like if they traded Stafford to Carolina, who was also a big player in the Stafford Sweet Stakes, Jared Goff is where? I don't even know where he is. So like, it's interesting to see from that dynamic, but are the Lions really going to get it done? Are they going to, now that the monkey is off the back, is this a team that's just going to go on a run?
I don't know if there's a more universally loved franchise or organization in all of sports than the Detroit Lions. And I know a couple Lions fans. I'm going to give a shout out to Thomas Coburn because we used to do the From the Nosebleeds podcast on CTB, and he's a big Lions fan, and it's been a long time coming for people like him. But like, man, everyone's just fallen in love with the players on this team, with the organization, with the fans, and they empathize with them, and everyone was rooting them on, happy to see the streak be broken. But it all starts with one man, and that's a head coach, Dan Campbell. And I'm not going to say I discovered Dan Campbell, but when I was about maybe like, I don't know, 14 years old, the Miami Dolphins fired head coach, I believe it was Joe Philbin that they fired, and in comes their tight end coach, Dan Campbell. And the story was that on the flight home, he wrote down on like a pad of paper all the ways he would make the team better and have them competing and how he would encourage them to celebrate and practice their touchdown celebrations in practice and just how he would motivate this group and bring them out with fire. And I want to look up the exact score of the next two games, but the Miami Dolphins, I believe they're 1-4 when they fired Joe Philbin. They came out the next 2 weeks. They played the Houston Texans and the Tennessee Titans. And they absolutely beat the wheels off of them like I've never seen the Dolphins beat teams before with Dan Campbell as their head coach in the first two games. And obviously the Magic faded throughout the year just because of how bad Miami's roster was. But Dan Campbell, like, he's just a culture-changing guy, and he's become probably everyone's answer at this point for the coach that every single player wants to play for, because his ability to change the culture and get the best out of his players and motivate is outstanding. And I'm just so, so pumped that they got this win, but they're not stopping here. And I think the way they came out yesterday was the most predictable Detroit Lions thing ever, because I knew how excited Ford Field was going to be to watch them play in the playoffs. And the fact that they just came out soaring, touchdown, 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 I was like, yeah, these guys are for real. And after the first touchdown on the broadcast, they went right, camera pan right to Dan Campbell. And if you saw the look on his face, he didn't even crack a smile. This guy was just like,
he was dialed.
This is what I'm here for. It's business as usual. We are the Detroit Lions. We are a playoff team. We are a Super Bowl contender. Obviously, there was a ton of emotion after the game. Brad Holmes in the elevator, his speech in the room after. The Jared Goff story is a whole another great twist. But it's like, man, how can you not root for these guys?
It could be the team of destiny. This could be a team of destiny. You just date back to halfway through last year. Like, this is a team that's lost like six games in the last calendar year, right? They're phenomenal. And I expect them to handle business wherever they're playing. I know they're playing the winner of... I'm sure you'll be listening to this tomorrow morning, so you will already have known who the Lions are playing. But at the moment, they're playing the winner of the Eagles and the Buccaneers. But I expect them to handle business there. And then who knows? They're either staring at Jordan Love, which I don't expect it to happen, but they're going to be staring dead in the 49ers' face. And if there's a team that can be more physical than you, upset you, and come into your stadium and straight up bully the bullies, because let's be real, the 49ers are bullies. It's those Detroit Lions, Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson, Jahmyr Gibbs, who I don't know if it's just me, but is he the fastest player that I've ever seen?
It looks like him.
It looks like he is just, he touches the ball and it is just boom. It's like house call every single time. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jared Goff, Aiden Hutchinson, CJ Gardner-Johnson. This is a team that is filled with studs. Brad Holmes has done a fantastic job. And just honestly, Detroit, I'm speaking right to the city, right to the core of Detroit. You guys deserve this. You guys better run with it. I better see Ford Field on Saturday night, absolute, or Sunday. When I think there's
I think it's Sunday. Sunday.
Regardless, yeah. Blow the roof off of it. I want to see Detroit take this thing right to Las Vegas. Hoist that Lombardi trophy. I want to see Dan Campbell grab the Lombardi trophy and just break it.
Because I genuinely
think if there's a guy that's going to break it, just smash it on the ground, it'd be Dan Campbell. And I think it's good. I'm telling you right now, there's something about this Lions team. And I know people are going to say, oh, but you picked the Rams last week. I picked the Rams because I thought it was this. I thought it was just a necessary evil that had to be done before the Lions take over the step. I've never been more happy to be wrong. Go Detroit Lions. I want to see you in Vegas, and I want to see Dan Campbell with the bottom of the Lombardi trophy here and the football right here and just hyped.
I feel like I'm hyped. If Dan Campbell and the Lions win the Super Bowl, he would smash the trophy on the field and say, like, we're not done yet. And then someone would have to, like, his publicist or some PR guy would come beside and be like, no, like you actually, like, can't win anything more than this. And they would have to explain that to him, and you'd just be so fired up. Also, I have the scores from his first two games as head coach of the Dolphins. They came out, they were 1-3, they played the Titans, they won 38-10.
Wow.
Destroyed them. Jarvis Landry, I think, 70 yards to the house on the first play. The next week, they played the Houston Texans. It was 41-0 Miami at halftime. That's the Dan Campbell effect right here. And I knew when the Lions hired this guy that if anything, they were getting a team or they were building a team that was going to play hard each and every week. And they have the coach that does that. And they have a GM who, if you just look at their last three draft classes, they built a Super Bowl caliber roster. They're young. And it's just like, now that they get another home game, now that your Cowboys are out, sorry to bring it up, but that is a big factor in this. It's just all systems go now for the Lions, and I think it is their time. They probably got the biggest boost of any team this weekend in terms of hopes to win the Super Bowl. And yeah, I'm fired up for the city of Detroit, the Detroit Lions organization. I hope to one day feel the emotions that we're going through Ford Field and seeing a franchise win a playoff game that hasn't done it in 30 plus years, because it's starting to be like that for Miami.
And who knows? You know, maybe a couple more years you'll be in that Detroit Lions situation here. But at the moment, Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions are the best story in sports. Kick rocks Joe Flacco.
Yeah, you said that a couple of, maybe last week you said Joe Flacco was the best story in sports.
It's over now.
That ended very quickly.
That was a debacle. But the Detroit Lions are here, and they're here to stay. And I cannot wait to watch them on Sunday. I hope it's against the Eagles, to be honest. I want to see the Eagles, because if it's against the Bucs, it's going to be kind of boring. I think it'll be boring regardless, because I don't think both those teams are anything special. But
I don't know, man. The Eagles are still weird for me, just because I can't forget their ceiling. I can't forget what they want.
Yeah, you're right. But you'd be ignoring the six-week sort of, book that we have on the Eagles at the moment. But those Detroit Lions, it was so loud in that stadium that you, watching it through, I watched probably the first 3 minutes of the game because I was just absolutely sick to my stomach. I was like, I can't watch this game. But watching it and hearing how loud it was like, holy crap. I don't think there's been a louder stadium in the history of sport. And I saw clips after the crowd was, the people were crying. It was yeah, awesome.
They didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. Come on. January 5th, 1991. We weren't even thoughts.
I know.
We were not even in remotely the picture at the moment. I don't even know what my parents were doing in 91. I don't know what
Did your parents even know each other in 91?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't think so. I believe they met in 94 or 93. So again, that's a while, right? A while. 32 years. Man, I honestly, I'm at a loss for words because it's awesome for the city of Detroit. It's awesome for the Detroit Lions. It's awesome for Jared Goff. It's awesome for Dan Campbell. I want to see them go all the way. I do. I really, really do.
Let's see it. That's going to do it for the show this week. Hopefully we can live our dreams through the future of the Detroit Lions. There's plenty of good football coming up. And I think the divisional week is like a sneaky contender for best week, and I find like the games on this week are always amazing, so I'm pumped to continue to cover it, and I'm pumped to be back here next Monday talking more of it. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Thanks for all the support recently, and we will see you next week.